You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. I appreciate you tuning in again this week, because on this show, we tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about American law enforcement. Let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. California has done it again. They are leaders, that is for sure. The California State Legislature and Governor Newsom are definitely leaders. Leaders in the war on cops. And they have gone and done it again. The same people that brought you the other failed propositions that have increased crime, decreased safety for both law enforcement and the citizens who live there, have done it again. You see, in their quest for being the most progressive politicians in the country, they are utilizing hate and distrust as their cudgel for re-elections. This time, they completely changed their state's use of force policy in such a way that it is now probably one of the worst for law enforcement. Because, in essence, the whole purpose of changing the use of force policy and state law was to make it easier to prosecute law enforcement officers for justifiable shootings. I'm going to read you just a couple of things. This is a headline. Governor Newsom on Monday signed into law what will arguably become the nation's strictest standard for police use of legal force. The new law, known as Stephon Clark's Law, after the unarmed black man who was killed by police in the state capitol last year, will usher in significant changes for police procedure when it takes effect on January 1st, 2020. In the new year, California police will no longer be allowed to shoot at fleeing suspects unless they pose an immediate danger, a long overdue update that dates all the way back to 1872. New language in the law also stipulates that law enforcement can only use deadly force when necessary, as opposed to the current wording of when it is reasonable. So, that's one of the major changes. Another crucial alteration is how they are referring to it. We'll show its effects in the courtroom. Under the new law, prosecutors will now be able to take into account the actions of the officers and victim leading up to a fatal incident, replacing current rules that only allow prosecutors to consider the seconds surrounding use of lethal force. Broadening the timeline could allow prosecutors to view such cases with greater context. Supporters believe the expansion will also encourage departments to further emphasize de-escalation practices. That is the buzzword of the day. Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, who authored this bill, called it, quote, an aggressive effort to retrain our officers and change the culture of police, unquote. Well, Assemblywoman Weber, it is not the culture of police that needs to be changed. It's the culture of criminality. But, of course, that would be actually laying accountability where it belongs, on the criminal. No, we can't do that. We have to make it the police being the problem. Of course. And the ACLU, oh yeah. Here's what they said. Police officers should avoid using deadly force whenever possible. No kidding. But right now, officers can legally use deadly force and kill someone even when they have other alternatives. AB 392, which is officially referred to as the California Act to Save Lives, introduced this year by Assemblymember Shirley Weber from San Diego, will make clear that officers should only use deadly force when they don't have other options. Oh, geez, here we go. You know, the changes are minute when it turns to the wording, but even a minute change can make it easier to prosecute a police officer. The reasonable officer statute or rulings by the Supreme Court have been in place for years. Oh, by the way, that reference to the 1872 law that allows you to shoot fleeing felons, that was ruled by the United States Supreme Court just about 30 years ago that you can't shoot someone simply for fleeing. They have to present a deadly threat or an imminent threat for death or serious bodily harm. So this is a propaganda tool that is being used by the anti-law enforcement lobby. Just the name of the bill, the California Act to Save Lives. Oh yeah, that's it. And the Stephon Clark. What prompted this law? The killing of Stephon Clark. Stephon Clark was committing several burglaries of houses and cars. People call the police. Helicopter spots him. Directs law enforcement officers in Sacramento to his location. He runs. He doesn't comply. He gets chased into the backyard of a house. Turns out it's his grandparents. He's trying to get back into the house. Officers tell him to show his hands. It is nighttime. They can't see him very well, but they do see that instead of complying and getting down on the ground and showing his hands, he walks towards them and raises an object in his hands like in a shooting stance. One of the officers yells, "Gun, gun," and they open fire and killed him. He didn't have a gun. He had a phone. So why make such a ridiculous type of response when told by police just to get on the ground and show your hands? Well, he had every drug in mankind, known to mankind, in his system. He was higher than a kite. He didn't do what the police told him. In fact, he threatened the officers. They thought it was a gun, and they took the appropriate action. Prosecutor said, justifiably, that they didn't commit any crime. They used the totality of the circumstances and acted reasonably. Now, if that same shooting were to take place after this new law comes into effect, that muddies the water. That gives, because the word necessary, if you read into that, well, wait a minute, he didn't have a real gun, so why was it necessary to shoot him? See where I'm going with this? This is going to, once again, muddy the waters in such a way that police officers are going to be questioning themselves, even at the moment that they have to be clear-headed about making a life and death decision. This could seriously endanger the lives of law enforcement officers in California. And let me ask you this, just like we've seen previously, we often see the nonsense that goes on in California infect other states. Are we going to see that again here? I wouldn't doubt it. And the more restrictive that not only states but also even police departments become in their use of force policy, that adds to the questioning factor by the officers. You know, the word de-escalation can mean a million different things. And in some of these new policies coming out by departments, they require, quote, de-escalation techniques, unquote, to be used prior to a deadly force decision. Well, that sounds really good in the light of day, but what about in a backyard when you don't have any time to de-escalate? When you think that someone is pointing a gun at you, you think you're just going to take the time to start using de-escalation techniques? Oh, please, sir, please, don't shoot. It's getting to the point where common sense doesn't even enter into these equations anymore. And Shirley Weber, who produced this piece of garbage bill, is the same person that put forth several of the propositions where basically they legalized everything. Her agenda is really clear. It's totally anti-law enforcement. is completely centered around the quote social justice unquote activities. So I'm afraid for those officers in California. I'm afraid that A, they're not going to know how to interpret this new law, because the propaganda used to put it out there is an anti-law enforcement theme. And they're getting pretty damn used to that, but now they don't know if this new change will be utilized to prosecute them, even when the shooting is justifiable by all the concepts that we're used to today. I have my doubts, but once again, it's the state legislatures have proven themselves in many occasions to be so caught up in the social justice nonsense that they are willing to throw their police officers under the bus. Now, talk about use of force, and then, you know, trying to include quote de-escalation techniques before you use deadly force. Just in LA, in Los Angeles, just yesterday, I'm going to read a headline to you. Gunman opens fire on LAPD patrol car in ambush. Two LAPD officers were stopped at an intersection about 11:30 p.m. when a man began shooting at them. Man armed with a handgun opened fire on two officers in their patrol car. Well, at least he was killed by police in a shootout right after this shooting took place. But the two officers were literally doing nothing other than stopped at a traffic light when this individual attempted to kill them. He did hit the car with his bullets. He did not hit the officers, which is nothing but a matter of luck. He then ran. Officers gave chase, brought in other units, and the suspect was killed. But why? What caused this individual to, for absolutely no reason, open fire on police officers? I don't know that we will ever find that out, but these unprovoked attacks are not slowing down at all. In fact, just 2 days ago, here's another headline. Three NYPD officers injured by cop-hating mob. Three police officers were injured by cop-hating mobs outside Brooklyn housing projects early Sunday morning. The report said some of the minor injuries suffered by the police were caused by objects tossed from rooftops. At least six gunshots were heard from the rooftop of the housing project, which caused the police to run toward the gunfire, which is exactly what cops do. Several people were arrested, but once again, you have people, and seems like more and more in New York City, who feel empowered to attack law enforcement officers. We've seen it with the water dousing. We've seen it with other attacks against them. And now this one. So the war on cops is very real. It isn't just the physical dangers like this, but that plays a huge role in it. And we're not seeing an abatement of this. We're in fact seeing an increase in this. And we're not seeing the NYPD standing behind their officers. In fact, with the firing this week of Daniel Pantolero, who is the officer involved in the death of Eric Garner, the police commissioner made the decision to fire him. Now, all of the investigations, the criminal investigation, Department of Justice investigation into the death of Eric Garner, reveal that he was never placed in a chokehold. And yet that's what the media and the charges against Officer Pantolero claim was the cause. And in reality, It was not the cause. The cause of death for Garner was the fact that during his resistance, his active resistance to the officers who simply wanted to place him in custody on a misdemeanor charge, he was a large, large man, and he was obese, and he had a lot of health problems. So all his heart problems, his obesity problems, his lung problems, all when he exerted himself against those officers, that's what caused his death. And yet they're accusing Officer Pantolero of everything, including, you know, the people that are so vocal or calling him a murderer, saying he choked him to death. He didn't. Well, the NYPD knows that he didn't, but they are following the lead of that moronic Mayor de Blasio, who was dancing a little jig when the commissioner announced the termination of Officer Pantolero. So, this is like the perfect storm of anti-police, all the police anti-police negativity. So you got attacks on the law enforcement. You have laws being changed, which may make it easier to prosecute the police, and then you have administrators who don't have the backs of their officers. So this is the perfect storm for the breakdown of the law enforcement system, because you're not getting enough people to fill the roles. You're not keeping your people because they're quitting because they don't feel A, appreciated, and B, safe within their own police agencies. And this is just continuing to spiral. It's not getting better. I keep on hoping and praying for it to get better, and it just keeps on getting worse. And then you get a guy like the Dallas County Commissioner who votes against honoring murdered cops, saying they brought it on themselves. It is absolutely astounding. This piece of human garbage in Dallas, Texas, Dallas County Commissioner John Wiley Price, who, by the way, was arrested for corruption, and unfortunately, they did. He had a hung jury. He was voted to not honor the Dallas police officers who were ambushed. And he says, well, no life is more important than any other life. And Price said that unjust police violence was the cause of the terrorist attacks against the officers when they died. It is absolutely stunning that this moron feels empowered enough in his elected position to say such an outrageous statement, blaming the victims and failing to honor them. It is beyond belief. Well, at least I wish I could say it was beyond belief. And this is what we see. This is what our officers are facing every single day. So thank you for listening to My View from the Blue. Now we're going to take a walk into the interview room. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras. gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them. Contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is Ron Barber. Ron has been around the law enforcement training scene for over 25 years. He is the founder and the chief cook and bottle washer at In the Line of Duty. And he's been providing video reality-based training for law enforcement for 25 years. Ron, thanks so much for joining me on Blue Lives Radio.
Randy, buddy, it is always a pleasure to be with one of my favorite cops, and I brought a copy of one of my favorite books, which is called True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them.
We're going back into history, are we?
And I tell you what, Randy, going through this book, you will see yellow markers permeating every page or two, and it is one of my favorite books by one of my favorite authors.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that so much, Ron. You know, you and I have been traveling around the same circles for a long time, and we've had a number of conversations. Your dedication to the American law enforcement officer is without parallel. So I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, and especially because the topic that we're going to lead off with is so vitally important, and you just released a new video, a new training video that is topically so important, and that's what I want to talk to you about today, and it is the training video you did about law enforcement suicide. You and I have been around a long time, but why did you create this particular training program?
You know, we've been mulling it over for literally years, Randy. I have known for a long time that this is a critical issue, and we actually did some videotaping 7-8 years ago with a fantastic young sheriff named Tim Whitcomb up in Cattaraugus County, New York. And Tim had acceded to the position of sheriff, Randy, after his predecessor had seemingly inexplicably called in on the radio one morning and told dispatch that this is where you could find him and he would be dead. And sure enough, that is what happened. And Tim loved this man. But perhaps even more so, Randy, he was absolutely devastated and angry that the sheriff had done what he had done for seemingly no reason. And it took Tim a long time. He had some problems with alcohol. He ended up having some problems in his relationship with his beautiful wife. It devastated him. And I think that that is one of the elements when an officer takes his or her own life that is often completely overlooked. And that is the utter devastation that occurs with those who are left behind. Not only the family, for God's sake, but also his or her fellow officers.
Oh, you couldn't be more right. I mean, when a law enforcement officer commits suicide, the ripple effect is a tidal wave, if you will, and it really can devastate an agency. But, you know, you pointed out in the video that you just did that there were actually 5 police suicides within a period of just a short period of time in New York City.
And so, well, that is kind of what was my call to arms, if you will, to rush this through production, not without maintaining the quality that I have strived for with every program I've ever produced, but realizing that this is hot. It is a critical issue. It is long overdue that it was dealt with head on and that law enforcement agencies get their head out of the sand and realize that, yes, mental health is equally as significant as physical health.
You know, this is something that has been really brushed aside for many, many years. I spent 34 years as a cop, and I've been involved in this business for, you know, I hate even to mention the length of time, but we were suffering as a profession for many, many years before anybody even recognized the fact that post-traumatic stress was an issue in law enforcement. And we are just now on the cusp of recognizing the devastating effects of post-traumatic stress can be. And I mean, why did it take us so long as a profession to even confront this?
Well, I tell you what, earlier this year, when I was battle planning the program, I chanced upon a study that was done in 1940 by the NYPD, and it blew me out of the water because the bottom line was that between 1934 and 1940, 93 New York officers had committed suicide. And it made me realize, my God, this problem goes back generation upon generation. And Randy, you know, a lot of it over the decades has been keeping the blue secret, worrying about stigmatization. And finally, I think that this is coming to the forefront. So back in December of 2017, I had gotten an email from a sergeant in Florida named Mark DeBona, who had told me a little bit about his own PTSD issues and his own near suicide. And we went back and forth and back and forth and trying to decide, well, should I go down to Florida to interview Mark, or should he come here? Should I perhaps shoot one of his classroom presentations? And ultimately, earlier this year, I realized the potential of Skype. And so over a period of the last few months, we have literally done multiple Skype interviews. And the beauty of that, Randy, is that it's free. And if, as a reporter, which I am, I realize after an interview I forgot to ask this or that, I can go back, Skype again, and round it out. And that's what we did. And I've got to tell you, DeBona is one of the nicest, most genuine, decent, lovable human beings I think I've ever met, who comes across on camera amazingly well. Here is a man who's in his cruiser one night, fed up with his lieutenant, fed up with his weight gain, fed up with his life, and he puts his service revolver into his mouth. He's written a note. He's hung it on the rear view mirror of his cruiser, apologizing to his mother and his wife. And he is within a gnat's eyelash of killing himself when almost unbelievably, one of his partners pulls up in another cruiser and is able to talk him out of it. I'm telling you what, it is one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard. And his comeback, the difficulty, the agonizing pain, mental issues he had to go through, I think will resonate with coppers everywhere. It's an amazing story.
I am acquainted with Mark, and I saw the interview that you did with him, and he's very, it's so critically important that our officers who are willing to talk about their brush with suicide, that they do so with the honesty and the integrity that they do for them to touch the lives of the people who are listening to them now. And Mark certainly absolutely did that. And you're right, it was an amazing interview.
Well, what we tried to do, Randy, in both this program and the one that'll be available at the end of the month, is cut to the chase. Let's get some critical information out there where it can make an immediate benefit. Now, you've got this bill or that bill that is making its way through Congress, which will funnel monies to departments to hire psychiatrists or to come up with programs and so forth. All well and good. But what we have done is we have provided absolutely critical information. For example, one of the elements that Mark pointed out is after every traumatic incident, there's got to be a debriefing. Okay, now that to you and me is logical, but what we have included is what to say in the debriefing, what words to use, how to make it a debriefing with teeth in it. I asked, and let me give you a couple of other examples. I wanted to know from Mark DeBona, what did his fellow officer say to him that night that was able to resonate with Mark Exactly what did he say? I wanted to know that because I felt other officers who might find themselves in similar situations could utilize that. I wanted to know when Mark finally found a counselor with whom he could identify, what was it about the counselor that impressed him? What did she say to him? What has Mark said in his speaking engagements over the years that has resonated with audiences? Exactly, Mark, what did you say that has gotten cops coming up to you and telling him face to face, you saved my life? So, Randy, I'm proud of these programs because they cut to the chase with critical information.
The fact of the matter is that every officer that has had literally any time at all on the job, whether and I think it's really critical to talk about the fact that it doesn't matter whether you work for a small rural community police department or if you work in some of the largest cities in the world or in the country, excuse me. What you're exposed to as a law enforcement officer is going to be cruelty. It's going to be violence. It's going to be sometimes in administrative incompetence or corruption. And when you roll everything into days, weeks, months, and years, even decades of service, it has a cumulative effect. And this is an interesting point. There are states that still, to this day, will not even consider post-traumatic stress as a line of duty injury if it cannot be addressed to one particular incident.
Oh, it's insane. And if I were an officer in any of those states, I would get my butt out of there to a state that gets it. Post-traumatic, it's, you know, Randy, it's like, and you saw it, it's like the chief of that, of the Virginia Beach Department. I utilized him at the very top of Program One after they had that mass killing out there a few weeks ago. And he pointed out exactly as you said, that after 10, 20, 30 years as a line officer virtually anywhere in this country, it is death by a thousand cuts. So you can't limit it to a single incident. It's cumulative. Or, hell, in many cases, it could be a single incident.
Yeah, exactly. But there are so many there's so many issues that when so an officer is suffering. Very often they do not want to go to their own police agency and even ask for help because, it's shocking, but even asking for help in certain agencies will get you fired.
Yep.
Or it'll get you reassigned, quote unquote, to desk duty or some other punishment detail. And so what happens, the officers don't trust their own agencies to go to for help. And as a result, they don't get the treatment that could, I mean, let's consider what post-traumatic stress injury. All right. I don't like the word post-traumatic stress disorder unless it actually becomes a disorder and it doesn't have to. Post-traumatic stress injury is just that, an injury that can be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't recognized that there are differences between the two. So officers who can be treated, who can go on to have happy, fulfilling lives, don't go and ask for that treatment because they're afraid of backlash, or they're afraid of recrimination, or being labeled something. And this is something that's not been addressed on a national level.
Well, as DeBona pointed out in Program One, he was very, very concerned about going to his own department down there in Seminole County, Florida. So he went all the way back to Boston, which was his native turf, and he had a hell of a time there. He was thrown in with alcoholics and drug abusers, substance abusers, very, very uncomfortable. Ultimately, they sent him to a hospital, shackled him into the bed, and his mom comes in, sees his son shackled to the bed. I mean, it was like one flew over the cuckoo's nest for him for a long time, and he comes back to Florida. He decides to try to go back on the job, has a very difficult time. He's still a very angry guy. He goes through several counselors. He just can't identify with them. But voila, he finally finds a female counselor who is an ex-cop who had her own drug issues, and it becomes a beautiful thing. So as he points out, it's going to be hell to come back. It's going to be hell to do the right thing, but it's got to start with you. And
well, you know, you bring up a really important point. This is something that I really want to just dwell on for just a moment. Sometimes to get the therapy that you need, it really requires a relationship to be built between the therapist and the affected officer.
Yep.
And unless that trust is developed, unless there's a certain respect for the competence of that therapist, very often it's not going to be the first one that does it for you. It may not be the third one, that is a critical part of being treated effectively. And so don't think that you're the Lone Ranger. If you go to a therapist and you just don't connect with them, you just move on to the next one until you find somebody that you feel that you can open up to.
Well, how many of us met our future wives on the first date, or how many women met their future husbands on the first date? I mean, it is to an extent trial by error. But as you say, Randy, and I agree, once you find the one who clicks with you, it can be a magical thing. And that's what DeBona points out. And I think his journey, if you will, to where he is now will be of, even if you're doing fine, you're going to be fascinated by this man's journey, what he's got to say, and what he can do for potentially hurting cops.
This is a topic that, as you know, I'm very, very involved in. The organization that we launched this year, the Wounded Blue, is the organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement. But those injuries are often not seen. You know, we're not talking simply physical injuries. The emotional, psychological injuries that occur are just as devastating and just as treatable. So the organization that we have created provides peer support for those men and women who are suffering. And we also assist in getting officers into treatment. That includes inpatient treatment as well as outpatient treatment. The help is, at least now, Ron, we're seeing a number of organizations stepping up to the plate and recognizing this as a serious law enforcement issue. Now, let's talk about leadership for a moment. Because one of the critical aspects of an officer recognizing the fact that they need help and then having not only the guts but the confidence to go and seek it, much of it has to do with leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
or lack of it.
That's exactly right. This is something that, I mean, it is. Or are organizations like the IACP National Sheriff's Association. Are they taking a forward looking stance at this now, or are they just kind of holding back like they've done for so many years?
Well, I know that the IACP and the FOP are actively providing a lot of lip service, and perhaps in a way, Randy, that's a start. But as I have studied the different organizations and the different bills, the Josh Hawley bill, I thought, okay, we're all talking basically the same talk. Now let's start walking the walk. And that's why I felt it so incumbent upon in the line of duty to put out a product that really, I think, can resonate and make a difference. I'm trying to make something happen rather than flapping my lips.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the same thing that I'm trying to do as well. And I think of a number of us actually are taking a stance now and creating services and products like your, which is your video is basically in essence a documentary film related to this important topic. And the more people that see that, the more awareness. So let's talk about how people can take a look at this episode. And also, you know, you've been doing police training for decades. Tell us about In the Line of Duty and how can they see these films that you produce?
Well, the first video, and we're calling them Preventing Suicide, The Amazing Journey of Sergeant Mark DeBona, Parts 1 and Part 2. Now, Part 1, as you accurately portrayed, is a documentary about one man's incredible journey through the odyssey of near suicide and post-traumatic stress, and the just incredible things that he can share. Now, number two, part two, The Amazing Journey, is nitty-gritty information. How to start a peer-to-peer group, who you should have in the peer-to-peer group, debriefing after every trauma, but here's what you need to say during the debriefing. Here are deep questions that you ask a brother or sister you feel may be hurting. Here's exactly what Mark's counselor's first words to him. This is how she appealed to him. These are things coppers are coming up to him saying at the end of his presentation. So part two is the nitty-gritty that I am convinced will be of immense use to law enforcement. And Randy, the military has a horrific suicide problem. And this program should resonate throughout every branch of the military. As far as In the Line of Duty, I'm a very proud guy. Maybe I wear it on my sleeve a little too much, I think, and have thought for many years. Law enforcement agencies that have not availed themselves of what we have provided are remiss. We have provided reality-based training, the real deal, with debriefings of the real officers for nearly a quarter century, and they're damned good programs that I know have saved cops' lives over the years. And, you know, here I am at age 71, still, plying the vaudeville boards because I love what I do, and I think we are making a difference.
Well, I can attest to that. You know, one of my jobs when I was still employed with the Las Vegas Police Department was I was in charge of advanced training. That's where I first met you. That's where I first saw in the line of duty. And the quality of the training that you provide was very impressive, even back in the when it was new technology. I don't want to date myself too much, but it was. And so how do folks find in the line of duty?
Well, website, very simple, lineofduty.com. And we've got an online store through lineofduty.com. You can go in, you can preview programs, you can purchase. If you've got an interest in subscribing, and I hope every department down there does, because we are pennies on the dollar, and you're going to get back so very much. It's like DeBona said regarding the suicide program to departments. You know, you need to look seriously at these PTSD issues. You need to look seriously at these suicide issues from not only a liability standpoint, but also because it's the right thing to do. And I feel that way about in the line of duty in general. So if they simply go to lineofduty.com, our online store, or give us a call, 800-462-5232. We are there to protect and serve.
Well, I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on to the show today, Ron, and talk about the great work that you're doing, in particular this one particular issue that is damaging so many families and lives. It's about time that we did the right thing, and you've certainly stepped up to the plate. So once again, Ron Barber from In the Line of Duty, thanks again for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you, Randy.
There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer, and you have been injured or disabled, and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team, all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed over. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help the Wounded Blue.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. I want to pay my respects to a police officer who did just that. They are not calling his death a line of duty death, although I believe that this is a true injustice. I'm going to read the article, and you tell me what you think. Cook County Police Officer Ronald Prochaska was fatally struck by a speeding driver on Sunday. He was killed in a fiery collision after he stopped to help a stranded motorist on Sunday afternoon. The off-duty officer pulled over near the Illinois River Bridge at approximately 4 p.m. to help a driver whose vehicle stalled on the southbound incline. As he was working under the hood of the disabled vehicle, a third vehicle slammed into the stalled car. The broke-down vehicle burst into flames, and the blaze quickly spread to the other two vehicles. Officer Prochaska was airlifted to Good Samaritan Hospital, where he died of his injuries. Officer Prochaska's daughter was also in the car and injured. Two other victims were treated for their injuries and released. You know, they're not treating this as a line of duty death. I believe that's a mistake. This officer cared enough about the oath that he took about protecting and serving to even stop when he was off duty to help stranded people. This shows the dedication, it shows the empathy that law enforcement officers all over this country have, the dedication that they have for service. So Officer Prochaska, I consider your death a line of duty death. May he rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I would urge for you to check me out on Facebook under the voice of American law enforcement. I do want to hear from you. If you have suggestions for the show, please contact me there and let me know. If you are a Twitterer, you can contact me at LT Randy Sutton. That's my Twitter account. And that's it for social media for me. Of course, that isn't true. I shouldn't say that. I guess I'm also on LinkedIn. And if you want to communicate over there, that works too. So thanks again. Make sure you check out thewoundedblue.org. And feel free to contact me if you have any suggestions or comments at my page, The Voice of American Law Enforcement, on Facebook.